morning. It is Monday, March 19th. This is Mountain Money on KPCW Radio. I'm Renee Bodley Miller here with my co-host Doug Wells. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning. It was quite the ski weekend we had.
It was quite the ski weekend. A lot of snow, finally, right? It waits until the 3 weeks left in the season or 4 weeks left in the season before it comes down.
We're getting close to the end, yeah, but it's been a good 30 days. The last couple weeks have been really nice.
You were out there this weekend.
I was out there Saturday. My Saturday morning was not as adventurous as yours was. Maybe we'll talk about that at the end of the show.
Sounds good. We'll keep the audience in suspense about my Saturday ski day. And everyone's in suspense about March Madness. My back bracket is busted. How about yours?
I'm in no risk of winning Warren Buffett's $1 million for the perfect bracket.
Did I hear there was like a 1 in 750 million chance of actually
it's
getting
crazy.
That right?
Yeah, I haven't run the odds, but it's astronomical, which is why Buffett can offer that $1 million.
But Little Caesars had offered all of its customers, if a 16 seed beat a number one seed, they would provide free pizza, I think today. So, of course, UMBC.
It is always worth tuning in to Mound Money. Now, there we just saved you. We just saved you $5, or maybe they're springing for the pepperoni, which is $6 these days.
Head to Little Caesars, and you can be a winner off of that Friday night game where UVA lost. UVA's out, UNC's out. I mean, what's the point of watching anymore?
That's what makes it fun for me, at least.
A lot of people are saying the most exciting first two rounds of March Madness in the history of the tournament.
Yeah, no, it's never been done, right? Where a number 16 seed upsets a number one seed.
And I think I saw a stat that 0.12% of all brackets filled out actually predicted that you picked UMBC to beat UVA.
I'm surprised anybody predicted that.
Well, you know, their mascots are retrievers. So if you're going for a cute, cuddly mascot, then maybe you picked UMBC.
Well said.
But we are not a sports show. Despite our last few minutes of conversation, we are a business show. And coming up this hour, we've got three fabulous guests. First, we're going to hear about a newfangled way for a doctor to make a house call, courtesy of Intermountain Healthcare. We're going to talk about their Connect Care services. Then we're going to talk about yummy food, Neater's Bakery and Cafe. They're celebrating 20 years in business. This is a Utah-grown business, which is really cool. And they're celebrating some successes.
Yeah, and it's, there's out by Kimball Junction. I remember when that opened, and I think I remember when I went to the first Neater's, and it's hard to believe it's been 20 years ago.
And then we're going to hear about Stoked Coffee and why they call themselves the official coffee of the outdoors. That is all coming up on Mountain Money right after these underwriters.
I'm Ryan Karchner, Director of Golf of the Promontory Club and KPCW sponsor. Members of the private Promontory community are offered two 18-hole golf courses with clubhouse amenities. Social events at Promontory provide members with year-round calendar of events with opportunities to support the community we love. Custom homes, home sites, and information about golf and more can be found at promontoryclub.com.
Hi, this is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We proudly support KPCW and many other local nonprofits. We have been supporting the local community and providing real estate services since 1976. All current and active listings can be found on our website at bhhsutah.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money here on KPCW. Our first guest this morning is Brian Whaling. He's the Associate Vice President of Telehealth Services for Intermountain Healthcare. He's here in studio with us this morning. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, glad you are here, especially in person. It's always fun to have the guests with us in studio. This sounds pretty phenomenal, where you can now call a doctor from your home or see a doctor through your iPad or computer and have a doctor's visit through technology.
That's correct. Intermountain Healthcare offers a couple different services. One is the direct-to-consumer service, as you talked about, that allows us as consumers to see providers 24/365. And so in this case, for low urgent care, low acuity care. So if you're just concerned about, I've got a fever, I don't know what to do, my child is sick, I don't know what's happening, we offer the opportunity to be able to talk with the provider and hopefully get it resolved right there online. It is a video chat, so they can see, the provider can see you or your child at that time and their condition.
How nice for that mom with a young child who wakes up at 2 a.m. and that kid is coughing and you don't know where to go, what to do. They can call someone at 2 in the morning and they'll get an answer?
They can. And in fact, The morning is a very busy time trying to figure out what to do if I need to take somebody to the emergency room, or if I need to go myself, or urgent care, or if I can wait, or hopefully we can resolve that issue right then and there so that you can get a peace of mind and direction, including certain prescriptions, non-narcotics, but certain prescriptions that you could have ready to be picked up for you when the pharmacy is opened.
And Brian, you mentioned that there's two parts to the strategy, the telehealth strategy. What's the second? The first is direct-to-consumer. What's the other part?
Thank you. Yes, the second part is really a provider-to-provider strategy. So in towns, and they could be major cities or towns like here in Park City and Heber, where we offer services for specialists and subspecialists. So if something happens, for example, a stroke call, they may not have a stroke specialist on board here at Heber. And so they can then, when a patient is notified that they're having or possibly having a stroke, they can then connect with our IMED, our flagship hospital down in Salt Lake City. They can also then get a doctor on the video. She can be then available when the patient is ready to do an assessment. So they can, we have high definition digital cameras that they can zoom in, see the pupil. They can do some testing, some assessments to make sure that if the patient is having a stroke, then what is the appropriate medication? So that's been very successful, and we've deployed that throughout rural Utah and Idaho and throughout the Intermountain West, actually.
You know, I like the stroke example because as we were talking in the green room ahead of time, time is so critical there. And there are drugs that, if you are having a stroke, that can be administered in the appropriate situation that will lessen the impact of that stroke. But you have to be able to properly diagnose and make sure it's a fit for that patient. And it's hard to have experts in all these rural locations. The rural locations, to me that sounds very compelling. How receptive were the providers at these rural locations to this new service? Was it everybody was on board right away, or was there some resistance?
There's a period of transformation in the care. So typically, the doctors are just overworked, like many of us. And in small towns, it's very difficult. Usually you have one provider or care team that they're on call 24/7, and like down in Kanab or someplace. And so it's difficult. So they're working all day long. Then they get a call in the middle of the night. They have to get back up again, and they have to then pick up their shift the next day. And so this offers an opportunity to avoid that physician burnout, the caregiver team. And really, it also offers an opportunity to expand their knowledge, meaning that they have access to, instead of calling your buddy down the hall, you can now then call somebody through a video and have a consult and just get a second layer of advice from providers that have seen more of these circumstances on a regular basis.
And we hear about a shortage of doctors and a shortage of nurses. You've just made the access for the patient that much easier. So how did you staff up to support this?
So it's a very good point, and so one of our principles for the telehealth program is keeping patients locally, keeping patients in their community. And the more that we can do that, they benefit more, their family, the patients themselves, their family members, and also the hospital and the local institution. So it's a little bit easier for us to recruit into Salt Lake City and some of the other major metropolitan areas. And even though I have to say that in some of the specialists, like neurocritical care, in some of the places like McKD or St. George, they've actually had hard times recruiting people as well. Right. So we can, through a critical mass, but also it allows greater flexibility. So instead of having one provider servicing just that local hospital, now we have one provider that can service for us up to 30 hospitals, for example. So they could receive a stroke call or infectious disease call or some of these other subspecialties that we have, and it doesn't really matter where the call's coming in from. They can respond to those individuals and address those concerns.
And take us behind the scenes, kind of building on Renee's question, staffing up for it. And let's start with the consumer side, because direct-to-consumer, because I suspect provider-to-provider is going to be work different. But are these doctors working like in a call center and they have professional teleconferencing equipment, or are they working out of their home and they're taking the call on their cell phones?
Very astute. So a little bit of both. We actually have the opportunity for the individuals to have a centralized command center where they can receive calls. But we also, after a period of time, allow them flexibility to work at home. And so that's also another advantage for not only the direct-to-consumer service, Connect Care, but our acute services, that the physicians and the care team members can work at home. And that adds flexibility for themselves. So they could be doing this part-time, or they could be doing this full-time. And if you want to, you have other caregiver needs, personal family needs at home, you can say, I'm going to work in the morning and then take the rest of the day for myself. So that, again, adds flexibility for these high-demand needs for providers and caregivers.
I imagine that surly Dr. House who doesn't have the best bedside manner in the world, and you say, okay, we're going to assign you to these remote telehealth services.
Well, so they still need to see, so some people have called it the website manner. So you're still interacting with patients, and we still want to make sure that we always respect patients and families.
Website manner, I like that. And it says the cost is $49, but may be covered if there's a benefit in your insurance. Is that becoming common now with insurance carriers?
Correct. And so this is a direct-to-consumer product, and so Connect Care. So, so we cover about 1 million lives now through Select Health, which is aligned with Intermountain Healthcare. But also we've been working in partnership with all the other payers, the Utah payers, and some of the national payers as well, to ensure that their members have access to the service. So if you have a traditional copay plan, a lot of times it's $10. Or if you are paying the $49, you can use your high deductible savings account for that as well.
You know, first I want to give kudos to Intermountain Healthcare. I know they're widely regarded nationwide as one of the more efficient and effective providers. I remember probably 6-7 years ago now when then President Obama mentioned Intermountain Healthcare in his State of the Union address. But I want to, and the reason I bring that up is I want to talk at the federal level what needed to happen to allow this type of service. I was pitched by a startup company 7 or 8 years ago for telehealth, and I happened to be at a Deer Valley concert, and I was just kind of flicking through on my iPad while I was waiting. I'd get there early so I can get good seats. And I was telling my friend, you know, here's a company, and they're doing, you know, you can call up for your doctor and it's $50 or whatever. And somebody was listening in behind me, and the guy said, they better not do that in Utah because that's against the law.
What?
So there was a time where you could not provide telehealth in Utah. What had to change to allow that?
So it's true that, so telehealth from a federal level started on from CMS on the Medicare side of things. So, and it was recognized that, as we talked about earlier, there's a general provider shortage. And it was typically just between urban and rural. So it was restricted on who could provide the service, where the patients could be located, et cetera. Utah recently adopted some language around the definition of telehealth, which is a video interaction. So that's our legal definition, which is pretty standard for the industry at this point. But it is legal at this point to provide these services throughout the country. Texas was one of the last states, and that they switched over. They changed their laws last year to restrict telehealth. But now it's available in all states across the country.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Texas, because there's a lot of people that come here from Texas in the summer. The person that was behind me was from Texas, and he was a physician from Texas. And so I asked him, you know, clearly, you know, he said, I'm a physician, I know what the laws are, blah, blah, blah. And you know, I didn't have a dog in the race. You know, I was just trying to find out more. But he clearly was against it.
Yeah.
Do you think that is common in the physician world, maybe 7-8 years ago, and is it still common today?
It's much less common today. The change is just astounding. I've been in the business a long time, and the over the last several years, the impact is, both on the provider side, the caregiver side, and the consumer side, where everybody's seeing as the advantage. They recognize, as we're seeing here in Utah, the expected growth, not only here in the Wasatch Pack, but obviously the front, that we just can't provide adequate care for all our patients. And so telehealth provides an opportunity for access convenience and cost structure, as you pointed out, for efficiency. So it's a little bit of a generational change, meaning that the newer doctors are coming in. They're, you know, as we all know, they've quote-unquote grown up with the internet. They've grown up with iPhones. They've grown up with FaceTime and the other consumer products. All our products, I should say, are HIPAA compliant, which means they're completely secure on their transactions. Huh. And so we don't record the interactions. So when you're talking with a provider, it's in the moment. But it is also part of your patient record. So if I have a ConnectCare visit and then I go see my provider in person, then he'll be able to see that I've had 3 visits over the last year for a particular condition, and it provides an opportunity for that further investigation. And conversely, when we're providing care online, our online providers can take a look at my medical record, look at my prescribing history, et cetera. And so we want to make sure that we're aligned, that we're not over-prescribing, and that we're always providing care. So for us, whether it's the acute care or the direct-to-consumer side, this is just an extension of our care team, and it's another delivery mechanism.
So if I call in with a problem, and let's say I have a persistent condition or something that I've already seen my primary care doctor for, she would be able to see whoever the doctor is, they would be able to see all of my visits ahead.
That's correct.
Prior to that.
Yep.
My medical history, in other words.
Yes, exactly. And so if you're with the Intermountain Healthcare System and your medical record is there. And so part of that, then, we want to make sure that we're providing care and not inappropriate care or duplicative care as well. So if you're calling in with a persistent condition, we can advise and say, you've had this before. Here's a short-term opportunity for you, or, you know, we can provide this right now, but you really need to go back to your primary care doctor at this time.
And Intermountain Healthcare is a nonprofit.
Yes, it is. We're a not-for-profit, community-based hospital. So this is part of our direction for providing care out in the community. Towards that, actually, we're also starting to work with United Way. We installed a system down in South Salt Lake City, with the Columbia Community Center down there to provide care for the patients. We set up interpretation services. So while you're talking with the provider, you can also have live video interactions with an interpreter, because we don't want to have another family member or somebody else offering interpretation services in case there are sensitivities around medical conditions or just conditions in general. So we offer that free of charge, and then we have access to hundreds of other languages that are coming on board at this time.
This seems so new. How do you do an ROI on a new program like this?
That sounds like a business show.
Oh, we're back to a business show, exactly.
So that's a great question. So,
and for our audience, ROI is a return on investment. $49, you're not charging much for these visits,
correct.
And the technology is expensive. So how do you guys make a profit doing this?
So there's a couple aspects to this. So so you can view it as a ROI, or the other side to viewing this as sort of the NOI, net operating impact, because there's direct revenues coming in, meaning that as consumers or the payers pay us for the services, but absolutely, it's not covering everything. We recognize that, and that's part of our community effort, that this is, it's not quite a loss leader, but it's part of that engagement. To provide care you're in a rural town or you're just sick, right? And I should say, I'll come back to your question, but the service is also offered nationally from us. So we have some employers who have employees traveling around, or if I go out to New York or lucky enough to be in Hawaii, and we've had these calls where I can still use ConnectCare on a national basis. So from an ROI perspective, we have the direct revenue coming in. We also contract with some of our partner hospitals and clinics throughout the Intermountain West. But a lot of it for telehealth is a cost avoidance. As we talked about earlier, instead of hiring 15 providers, for example, which might have been our choice for infectious disease, we were able to hire 3, and that's another specialty that's in very high demand with the low availability. We were able to hire a lower number of infectious disease doctors who provide care throughout the system. So that's a displacement, you know, a a movement of or cost avoidance there as well. There's other opportunities for level loading. So again, instead of if I have a provider in one location, now that doctor, she can provide care throughout the system as well. So there's various other opportunities as we look at these business models for how we always want to justify, and to your point, as a not-for-profit, we're stewards of our money and our community's money. And so we in development of each of these opportunities, the first thing that we do actually is a business case. And we identify the metrics. How are we going to be successful? What's the anticipated volume? Make sure there's a need out there on the consumer side and the patient and the provider side.
Yeah, I think there's huge demand on the direct-to-consumer side for several reasons. You know, Renee's example, you wake up at 2 in the morning, you're a parent, you want to do the right thing. You know, if it's me that's sick, I'm just going to power through it till the morning. But if it's my kid that's sick, it's a completely different story. But you mentioned if narcotics are needed, obviously you're not going to prescribe
That's
those
correct.
Over the phone. What about, you know, a real common thing, and I don't want to get too much into specifics, but like strep throat where, you know, antibiotics are needed. I know that there's a quick test that the doctor's office does to say, okay, unfortunately you do have strep. How do they handle stuff like that over the phone?
Another great question. So this is actually a real point of concern for us in setting this up. So a great example. So strep testing is very difficult to diagnose without the testing and without seeing something. So you can take the camera and view, but what we advise and what we've been working on this last year is actually setting up some strep testing locations. So we've been working with our pharmacies and our labs throughout the Intermountain West and Intermountain system. And we're working with other opportunities to, what we'll do is we think you have strep, but we don't want to overprescribe antibiotics. Mm-hmm. And so we will send that patient then to one of these testing locations. They can get a rapid strep test. And then if they're positive, their prescription is waiting for them. So we really, really try to avoid overprescribing. We measure how we're doing against in-person care. And make sure that we're always aligned with our antibiotic stewardship program.
I mentioned earlier, I'm not endorsing anything, but to me as a consumer, as somebody that has one of the high deductible by choice health insurance plans, just so I spend my money wisely, $49 sounds very compelling for this. And it brings up the question I'm about to ask, which is, you know, the whole cost containment. I mean, healthcare costs has been an issue for 20 years in this country. It's been increasing. What do you, and we're getting close to the end of the show, what do you wish that the general public knew that, you know, if we all had a better understanding, how could we as a community help keep costs under control?
Love it. So, so telehealth is an option. Always look for, as you're doing, and I'm in the same situation, always look for the right care, which is key for your condition. So using ConnectCare as the example, again, we offer the opportunity. If we can't offer a resolution to your concern, we do not charge. So, and we have a pretty high referral rate saying, we think it's strep or we think it's this condition, but we're not sure. Now, we recommend you don't have to go to the emergency room, but maybe in the morning, take your child to the urgent care if you're really concerned, or you could wait until you see your pediatrician or your primary care. So we're always directing the patient to the right level of care at the right time. And I think that's one of the most important. I think we all have, especially with our children, we're always concerned. This is life-threatening. We don't know what it is. And what we want to do, though, is saying, it's okay. We can offer you advice, and we can direct you to the care and say, you can wait overnight and try this. And sometimes it's sort of the quote-unquote home remedies, but try this, and if that still isn't working, come in the next day and see one of our providers or your own provider, wherever that is.
We need to wrap it up. We're talking to Brian Whaling, Associate Vice President of Telehealth Services for Intermountain Healthcare. Any final points you want to make about ConnectCare before we go?
ConnectCare is a great service. Telehealth is continuing to expand. We're really, truly at the infancy of the sort of the whole mode of telehealth. Other locations are starting to experiment with virtual reality, for example, with behavioral health and rehab. And so we're really just starting. I think from a consumer perspective, we should all be aware of it, that it's a safe, viable option. And with services like Intermountain Healthcare, it's part of our delivery mechanism.
And Brian, before we let you go, it sounds like you don't have to be a member of a specific insurance company. You can call an 800 number, give them your credit card number, even if you're uninsured. Do I have that correct? And if so, what is that 800 number?
Good. So it's actually, it's an app. Of course, there's an app for that, right? So it's Intermountain Connect Care, and both on regardless of your device, you download that, and you can enter in your basic information, and then you connect with a provider 24/7.
Great. Brian Whaling, Associate Vice President of Telehealth Services for Intermountain Healthcare. If you go to intermountainhealthcare.org, O-R-G, they've got a really good frequently asked questions segment on Connect Care that I found really helpful. So if you're interested in Connect Care, you can always go there. Mountain Money will be right back. We're going to have the CEO of Neater's Bakery and Cafe on the phone with us. Stay tuned for that.
Joining the Park City Chamber Bureau provides your business with lots of benefits. From business-to-business networking and promotional opportunities to access to our 1,000-plus membership database, becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit, membership-based organization and a proud KPCW supporter.
Matt here from San Francisco Design, supporting our local radio station, KPCW. Since 1990, San Francisco Design offers interior design and a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings with store locations in Salt Lake City and Park City on Bonanza Drive. On the web at sanfrandesign.com, San Francisco Design, love your home.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Fascinating conversation with Brian Whaling, Associate Vice President of Telehealth Services for Intermountain Healthcare. We're going to switch gears now and go from something we all hope we don't need to use to something that oftentimes we're looking forward to, which is a yummy sandwich. We've got James Worthington, who's the CEO of Neater's Bakery and Cafe, on the phone with us. James, welcome to Mountain Money.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
So we're based here in Park City, and our listening audience is primarily the Wasatch Back. I know you have a location here in Park City and also Heber.
That's correct.
You guys have been in business 20 years. Tell us how big your organization is now.
Yeah, so we've grown from that first store that we opened in 1997 to now 59. Actually, we'll open our 60th store here in about 3 weeks in Idaho. So.
And is it your parents who started the stores in 1997?
Yes, that's correct. Gary and Colleen Worthington. They had had previous food experience, and we're looking for something new, something a little different, and opened that store up when I was a teenager, and so I've been involved with the business ever since then.
What was their background in the food industry?
So they were actually Subway sandwich franchisees. In fact, they had the first Subway sandwich here in the state of Utah, which was on State Street in Orem, about 4th North in Orem. Ended up opening 8 additional locations, so they had a total of 9 Subway sandwich stores before they sold those and retired. And They retired when I was a teenager, which as a teenager, I don't think there's anything worse than having retired parents that are always around and want to be involved in everything you do. but they got bored very quickly of being retired and wanted to look for something new to do, and got involved with Sherm Robinson over at the Lehigh Roller Mills and became very good friends with him and started a relationship there that turned into a business relationship, and they still supply our flour to the day. For what we do. So
you know, that's a brutal industry, right?
Yeah.
Sandwich space. And it's gotten even more brutal in part due to folks like your parents' success with Subways and the various other sandwich franchises that have popped up everywhere. Clearly, you guys have been successful. What was their philosophy? What was their strategy that differentiated them and allowed them to grow and to prosper in such a competitive space?
That's a great question. I think that we have a saying here at Neater's that it's all about the bread, and that's where it kind of started. You know, we entered a space with our bread that Utah really hadn't seen before, in European style hearth breads, and I mean, they're just really, really high quality, amazing breads that we make our sandwiches on, and that's kind of where it all started. And then we added the fresh roasted hand pulled turkey, which we still do to this day. We roast our turkeys overnight in every store every day. And just having that really fresh, high-quality bread, those fresh ingredients, I mean, people can definitely tell the difference. I mean, it's something that that we know that people can tell, and it's brought people back to Kneaders over and over again.
And did your parents start Kneaders with the idea that it would potentially become a franchise?
Yeah, again, coming from that background with Subway, that's kind of the environment they were used to, and I think they had hoped that it would grow and that they would have that opportunity, but it was certainly hard to kind of get that rolling and get that off the ground as far as the franchising piece go. But we found a few people along the way who believed in Kneaders as much as we do, and it's worked out really well for us.
So, James, we've asked you about your parents' story. Tell us yours. So your parents started this, it sounds like, when you were a teenager. You probably went off for a period of time and did your own thing and came back, or is that not the case?
So I was involved in the business from the beginning. You know, I was a senior in high school when we opened the first store there, and I did everything from washing dishes to baking bread. So I went to school down at BYU in Provo, and while I was there, I would bake I'd do the bakes. I'd come in at 2 a.m. with my father, and we'd bake the bread for the day. And then from there, after I finished up school down in Provo, I ended up opening up our first franchise up in Midvale, Utah, on Fort Union Boulevard, and ran that store for 8 years with my wife, Amy. And at that point, I was going to school at the University of Utah in their master's program and the MBA program. And when I finished that, my parents called up and said, "Hey, we could use some help growing the business down here. Do you want to come back?" And I said, "I'd love to come down and help out if I can." And so kind of took that pathway. But I've done everything in the store from making pies to making sandwiches to helping people out. And I've just loved the business every step of the way.
Boy, that's brutal, starting work at 2 a.m. I've heard early shifts, but that's as tough as it gets. How about your siblings? Do you have brothers and sisters that are in the business as well?
I've got five sisters, and at some point they've all been involved in the business. I mean, family businesses are very much that way. You know, everybody helps out when they need it. I still have several that are involved in the business today. I've got a sister that handles all of our retail items, so the gift baskets and the decor items that are in the store. She handles that part of the business for us. You know, I've got a sister who's a part owner in a store, and so it kind of spreads the gambit of how they're involved, but of my five sisters, they've all been involved in the business at some point or another.
And I'm looking at your job description as CEO, and it says that among your primary responsibilities are the development and management of internal systems, including those implemented at the store level to create efficiencies and processes. And a question about a bill that came up in our state legislature this year. And in Park City, we called it the bill that bans bag bans, because we have eliminated plastic bags at our largest grocery stores here. But a lot of restaurants, the Utah Restaurant Association, did not like, they supported this bill because they said it would impede their ability to provide whatever containers they think are necessary at their restaurants. Can you shed some light about what a restaurateur's concerns would be about a bill the likes of which Park City passed?
Yeah, you know, costs are always something that are concerning with restaurants. I mean, restaurant margins are pretty razor thin, and competition is very, very fierce. And so we're always trying to manage costs that way. You know, for Kneaders, we took the approach of trying to move away from a lot of the plastics and things that we've used in our stores. You know, we've gone to actual dishes that items are being served on when they're served in the store, trying to be you know, as sustainable as we can with the items that we use for to-go. And certainly, we're always conscientious of that. You know, we've made some shifts with our bread bags that used to be plastic to now where they're paper. And, you know, costs are always an issue, and definitely plastics tend to be a little bit cheaper. And so, you know, I can see why there would be some hesitancy from restaurant owners. You know, when any time there's something like that comes up, you know, they're conscientious of how that's going to impact their costs.
Yeah, cost is always a factor. You guys are also big proponents of giving back. My notes here show that you guys have donated over 1 million loaves of bread to local groups that help folks that need help with nutrition, need help with their food. Talk to us about how you got involved with that and why that's an important part of your mission.
Yeah, we've been involved with that near the beginning. One of the key ingredients, if you will, to Kneaders' success is having fresh product on a daily basis, and And with that being said, every day we tend to have some items left over, and we needed to find a way to, we didn't just want to throw away these items that were great quality items, and wanted to find a way that we could give back a little bit. And so what we do is we allow each store to identify a group in their area that they can get involved with, and it ranges anywhere from, you know, we have some stores who are involved with the Navajo Nation down at the Four Corners area with donating breads to that group, the Catholic Mission in Salt Lake. You know, wherever there's a need in the community, you know, we allow the stores to go out and identify that need and to participate with them. And several stores, you know, they'll divvy it up. They'll do one day with this group, another day with this group, and yeah, it's a great way for them to give back in the community.
And for any of our listeners who may not know what Kneaders is, you guys are sandwiches, your salads, your soups. It's really nice, hearty, good for you fare. And yeah, Man, I wish you guys delivered.
Yeah, we've actually started testing. It's funny that you say that. We've started testing. You know, we'll deliver larger catering orders typically, but we've actually started delivering in several of our stores smaller orders as well, and have had a lot of good response to it. And I think you'll probably see that roll out here in the next few months chain-wide.
So Renee wishes you delivered. My wife loves going to Kneaders. I enjoy it as well. There's so many decisions to make.
Like, yeah.
You know, when you go to Kneaders and they ask, would you like mustard on it? And you say yes, then you have like, which of these four mustards
yeah,
do you want?
Yeah, we like to give options.
Am I the only one that's giving you that feedback? It's like, oh,
no,
there's all these
no
decisions. I just would like a turkey sandwich, please.
No, we've certainly heard that before. We find that when we open a new store, it takes a few months before people kind of find their groove there of what they like on a regular basis and start to get that. But you know, we try to give the best you know, quality that we can, and we realize that tastes are different for everybody, and so we try to give some options there for sure.
And how do you work around the increasing desire for gluten-free or peanut-free and allergies and people with their very specific diet restrictions?
Yeah, you know, that's something that we have to be very conscientious about. I've got several family members, a son of mine also included, who are allergic to some of the ingredients that we have. And you know, first it comes down to education. You know, want to make sure we educate people, let them know what's in the product, so that they don't have a bad reaction or can't have something there that they think they can. And then as far as dealing with it, I mean, we try to offer offer options for people who can't necessarily have gluten or are allergic to something. You know, we try to offer as many options outside of that as we can, and we have some great items that are certainly gluten free. You know, it's hard in an environment like a bakery, though, especially a scratch bakery, where there's flour in the air and there's those ingredients that float around. And so people who are still, you know, if they have a high sensitivity to gluten, you know, they'll want to be careful eating at Kneaders, just because you just never know what's floating around in the air as far as flour particles, those types of things. And so we just try to offer options and educate people, and that's the best we can do with that.
James, what about the future? I mentioned earlier you're in 8 states. We talked earlier, you've got 59 stores, soon to be 60. What do you see the next 20 years looking like for Kneaders?
We love this brand. We think it speaks to a lot of people, different generations, different backgrounds, and we'd love to continue to grow the brand. I mean, we love being involved with the stores. You know, we love opening new stores and new communities and growing our, we call it the Kneaders family, growing our family that way. And we would love to keep growing and keep serving amazing food to people, giving them an experience when they come in and treating them right.
How do you find new franchise owners? Are you looking for new franchise owners?
We're always looking for people who want to get involved in the business, and it comes a variety of ways. You know, we get inquiries, you know, via our website on a daily basis for people looking for opportunities. We even get some international. We've had some interesting emails come in from different parts of the world interested in the brand and translating that brand over to a different culture in a different country. And so we just look for good opportunities, look for people who are as passionate about the food as we are and kind of go from there.
Well, James, we thank you for joining us this morning on Mountain Money. We also thank you for having a couple locations in our neck of the woods. It's always great, as Renee said, it's healthy food. It's great to have a healthy alternative right down the street.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Our guest this morning has been James Worthington, CEO of Nieder's Cafe and Bakery. Stay tuned to Mound Money. Up next, we're going to have the owners of Stoked Coffee, the official coffee of the outdoors.
Whitney Wall here from Park City Mountain and KPCW sponsor. Park City Mountain's Epic Promise recently committed to a net zero footprint by 2030. The environment is our business. By 2030, we commit to zero net emissions, zero waste to the landfill, and a zero net operating impact to forests and habitat. More information at epicpromise.com.
This is Brooks Harbertson, commercial lender for Mountain West Bank, sponsor of the amazing programming on KPCW. At Mountain West Bank, we offer consumer loan options as well as home loans and business loans in one location. Mountain West Bank, just off Kearns, next to the theaters. MountainWestBank.com, division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Hi, I'm Tony Tyler with Columbus Pacific Development. We're a proud sponsor of Mountain Money programming on KPCW. Columbus Pacific Development is a local Park City company with offices in Canyons Village. We're dedicated to bringing residential, hospitality, and commercial projects to Park City, including the Kimball on Main, Apex, and Viridian Residences.
Welcome back to Mound Money. Thanks again to the Nieder's family for chatting with us about Nieder's and their 20th anniversary. On the phone with us now is Jax Marius, the owner of Stoked Coffee. Jax, thank you for joining us on Mound Money.
Thanks for having me. How's it going?
It's going well. So I you know, you've got a little teaser here on our notes that says you guys are the official coffee of the outdoors. What do you mean by that?
So I kind of treat my coffee company a little bit different than your traditional coffee roasting business. And we started over here in Oregon 4 years ago, and I'm a professional runner. And so my love of coffee and running, I decided to really brand our coffee company all about getting folks to get stoked to be outside and fuel their adventure with premium coffee.
And Jax, you've got a pretty strong marketing background. Can you tell our listeners how you developed all these marketing skills?
Yeah, I had a track in corporate America for about 14 years and ended up heading up marketing in different companies such as Lucy Activewear and Crocs Footwear and Native Eyewear. And so I started to build all those different pieces to my marketing toolkit. And in 2011, I decided to branch out on my own and start my own boutique marketing agency. So have had 9 clients at once. And then when I opened up Stoked Roasters, I decided to minimize that side of the business and just use it to fuel what's stoked.
And Jax, where can people in Park City, where can people in Heber, where can folks in the Wasatch back find Stoked Coffee?
So we ended up opening a 500 square foot coffee shop right on Main Street in Park City. So we're right up on the top left above OP Rockwell. And so we have a nice little boutique coffee shop there.
When did you open?
We opened kind of officially right after Sundance Film Festival. So we did a soft opening around Christmas and then ended up running through Sundance under contract and then relaunched in January.
And how has business been so far for you?
It's been great. Super fun, and everyone that's been coming in has been really excited about craft coffee coming to Park City, and we're really obsessive about every single cup that's delivered out, and so I think people have been really stoked about that.
Now, Jax, you just used a term that both Renee and I looked at each other. Is that a brand, cross coffee, or is that a technique?
With Stoked?
Yeah, I thought I heard you say something about the consumers were really happy to have access to cross coffee. Did I misunderstand?
Oh, craft coffee.
Oh, craft. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, so there's kind of like, you know, first wave would be Folgers and so on. Second wave would be your Starbucks and all that. And then kind of like craft beer or specialty wine and so on. There's a whole rage that's called third wave coffee. So it's like bringing craft to how we're roasting our coffee beans. And so there's a lot of, it's kind of like specialty coffee. And so we adhere to Specialty Coffee Association of America, all of their standards. And so every cup that we're delivering out is very, very particular and weighed
off.
Yeah,
you know, what's interesting, I have some friends that are really high-end coffee aficionados, I mean, with thousands, espresso machines that cost thousands of dollars. So they're really into it. And, you know, when I hear them talk about their coffee, it's like a lot of people would talk about a red wine. You know, yeah. It's very particular about the roasting. They know the story of the person that roasted mm-hmm. it. And then there's a certain way to actually make that cup of coffee, and everything's very, very sensitive. And that takes a lot of training. That takes a lot of education. So your team here in Park City, was that a group that had been involved in another store that you brought out here, or were you able to find that talent here locally?
We actually were able to find that talent locally with some folks that are really, really obsessed with coffee and were looking for a location to work at that was really, really particular about that process. And we also had a lot of training go into it too. So it's really, really important to us that every single cup that is delivered is measured and precise as far as every standard. So that's a really big deal for us. And I'm actually standing right in front of our coffee roastery right now here in Oregon. And, you know, everything goes into, I mean, it goes back to roasting the bean. And just like you said, it's like we're kind of like a winery. You know, how we're roasting, we're watching it every single minute, and to make sure that every part of the process is delivered perfectly.
Now, Jax, you talked about Specialty Coffee Association of America and their standards. Uh-huh. What are some of those?
Yeah. So that goes down to looking at, like, how many grams are going into a shot, what the extraction weight is, how much time it takes. So every single piece of even the brewing process is there's certain standards that they have developed that if you want to adhere to, your kind of your understanding what those standards are and then delivering it within your coffee shop.
And so Starbucks doesn't have to abide by those same kind of standards?
In my opinion, they're more second wave coffee or corporate coffee. So, their machines are automatic. I don't know how often they're calibrating them. I think you're going there for a different reason. There, it's convenient. It's a quick cup of coffee. There is a piece of community within Starbucks, but we're a little bit more, we're what would be third wave, so we're just a little bit more focused on craft and perfection with every shot. So we're literally weighing the dry grounds going out, the wet espresso coming out, everything is particularly weighed.
Well, Jax,
so it's almost like longer and more craft.
Jax, your Main Street store is about a 5-minute walk from where I'm at. I have a 10:30 meeting when this show ends, but I have enough time to go up and check it out. I do want to ask you a question, though. A year and a half ago, either for Lent or for the first of the year, I like to give up something that's difficult to do and just see if I can do it. A year and a half ago, I gave up caffeine.
What?
But I love coffee. So I switched to decaf. What's your organization's view on decaf? Is that okay, or am I going to be kicked out the front door?
Oh, no. Decaf is great. I think that's also, we roast a real good decaffeine, so I think you'll really enjoy it.
Okay, excellent. Tell us about decaf, though. I know the bean itself gets decaffeinated. How does that happen?
Mm-hmm. I think there's a couple different processes. One is a chemical process, another is a Swiss water process. So we only buy organic beans, and usually in our case, it's all a Swiss water process, but it's almost washed out. So it's a process that happens at the farm before we get the bean. So it's nothing that we're doing. We'll get a green bean that's already been decaffeinated, and then we our decaf right now is a mixture of Peru and Mexico beans.
Excellent. And we're going to need to let you go in just a minute. But before I do, two quick questions for you. You're a professional mm-hmm. athlete. We're a business show. So I want to talk to you about your transition from being a professional athlete to business and maybe whatever advice you might have, because we do have a lot of uber athletes here in Park City. And then just real quick, is Jax your God-given name or is that a nickname? I love that name. Both my daughters have unusual names. How'd you end up with the name Jax?
Jacqueline is my given name, and then I didn't really prefer Jackie, and so I started making up my own name and came up with Jax in high school.
That was a sign you were going to be a good marketer. That's a great name. I like it.
Yeah, and then athlete-wise, I'm a professional ultra runner, and I was the first woman in the world to complete a self-supported ultra running race series called the Grand Slam Plus in 2016, and became the world champion by winning four of them. And I still am doing ultras today. I'm doing a race in Morocco actually in 3 weeks. So I guess to quickly answer your question, you know, I kind of go by the motto, dream it, do it, and seize the day. And so I get up usually at 5 every day, and then it's a mixture of running, strength training, and working every single day from a.m. to p.m. to make it all happen.
And Jax, you said we can find Stoked Coffee here on Main Street in Park City on top of OP Rockwell. Where else is Stoked Coffee?
So our other location, our roasting facility and tasting room, is right here in Hood River, Oregon in the Pacific Northwest. And then folks can always shop online at stokedroasters.com. And so we have our instant coffee as well as our whole beans and merch that someone can click and ship anytime they want.
And what was it about this Park City location that you thought would make it a good store for a coffee shop?
I think it was the outdoor element of it. So when I'm thinking of expanding, I always want to look at outdoor towns, and Park City is a mecca of that from summer to winter, whether you're skiing, running, biking, you name it. So it really fuels our branding message of serving all those outdoor enthusiasts with a premium cup of coffee. So it was a perfect fit.
Well, Jax, if you are ever in Park City, it would be fun to check in with you in about a year and see how business is going. It'll be exciting to hear what you've been up to, what kind of marathons and what kind of business achievements you've had. Would you like to come join us in studio sometime?
Yeah, I actually live in Park City, so I commute to this location once a month.
Well, then we're definitely going to expect to see you in studio with us. Thanks so much for your time.
Hi, you guys.
Jax, anything else you want our listeners to know about Stoked Coffee before we go?
No, just hoping everyone can get in there and have a sip, and it'll be the best coffee you've ever had.
Right on. Jax Marius, the owner of Stoked Coffee. You can find it right here on Main Street. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, guys.
Mountain Money will be right back with a thank you to our sponsors. Don't go away.
Hi, this is Kevin Holiday, bike buyer for Jan's, supporting KPCW. Jan's Bike Shop is open year-round for sales and service. We offer bikes from Trek, Scott, and Santa Cruz. Bike apparel from Gore, Bontrager, and Club Ride. Available at our flagship store on Park Avenue, 649-4949 or jans.com.
Hello, I'm Bruce Bohm, a partner at the Park City office of Jones Waldo, and pleased to support programming like Mountain Money on KPCW. Jones Waldo continues to grow through tackling our clients' challenges head-on and finding solutions to complex legal issues. More about us at joneswaldo.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mound Money. We want to start off by thanking our great sponsors. We couldn't do a show like Mound Money without our sponsors, and we thank them for that. They include Mountain West Bank, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Park City Chamber Bureau, Jones Waldo, Holbrook and McDonough, Columbus Pacific Development with Viridian and Apex Residences, San Francisco Design, Park City Mountain, and Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties.
We also want to thank our guests. We started with Brian Whaling. He's the Associate Vice President of Telehealth Services for Intermountain Healthcare. James Worthington, the CEO of Neater's Bakery and Cafe. And Jax Marius of Stoked Coffee. Thanks to all of them for being on our show. And if you missed any of our segments today, if you want to go back and re-listen to something, you can find it on our website, kpcw.org. The show's usually posted an hour or two after we go off the air, and we keep them on the website in perpetuity, Doug, so you can go back and listen to any of them.
It's an impressive website. For listeners that haven't gone, I encourage them to do so.
Yeah.
It's kpcw.org.
Exactly. And we've got the KPCW app you can download as well. That's a great way to keep in touch and listen like a local no matter wherever you are. You're listening to KPCW, Park City, Mountain Money. We will be back next Monday.